Hello, this is Donna, and for the rest of this hour, I'll be reading from the weekend edition of the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In headlines, the U.S. is on track to have historically low numbers of homicides in 2026 by Sophia Riddle of the Associated Press. Data collected from 30 American cities showed an 18% decrease in the homicide rate from 2025 compared to the same period in 2026, translating to about 215 fewer homicides this year, according to a new report from the Independent Council on Criminal Justice. Should that trend continue, it would push the annual homicide rate to the lowest levels in over a century once final numbers are released at the end of the year. The report, released this week, tracked 13 crimes and recorded drops in 9 of those categories, including carjackings, residential burglary, and aggravated assaults. There was a small jump in shoplifting, domestic violence incidences, sexual assaults, and drug offenses over the same period between 2025 and 2026. Experts say the broadly positive changes are exceeding expectations, improving on baseline crime rates from before 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic, which brought historical surges in violence. Democrats and Republicans across the country have tried to capitalize on the positive developments during a competitive midterm election year, but the trends documented in the report carry through in cities with leadership across the political spectrum. That suggests that the most significant factors contributing to the improvements are taking place nationwide and not specific to a single local public safety measure. Murder and other crime rates are falling across the map in cities with different political leadership, different housing and economic conditions, different political and prosecution and violence reduction strategies, and different levels of federal enforcement. The Council collects data from police departments and other law enforcement sources. Some of the report categories include data from many as 36 cities, while others include fewer cities in their total because of tracking gaps or differences in definitions for specific crimes. Notably, it was stated that a significant number of violent crimes were less deadly. There's 23% drop in the lethality of the crimes committed. That's measured by the share of violent crime that is fatal. Most of the nonviolent crimes tracked in the report also saw declines, including a 13% drop in residential burglaries over years and a 50% drop in burglaries compared to pre-pandemic levels. At the same time, reported shoplifting bucked the trends of other property crimes, showing a 5% increase. And while there was a small decrease in drug offenses, they were still lower than the pre-pandemic levels. Roughly a third of the 30 sampled cities defied average homicide rate declines across the country, recording an increase in the first half of 2025 to the same period in 2026. In other news, Hochul says that SUNY students can attend the fair for free on August 27th. Entry is free by showing a valid student ID or your admission letter. Current and incoming SUNY students will get free admission to the Great New York State Fair on August 27th, Governor Kathy Hochul said on Friday, giving thousands of students a chance to attend the annual event at no cost. Students attending any of SUNY's 64 colleges and universities can gain entry on Student Youth Day by showing a valid student ID or an admission letter. The fair will run from August 26th through September 7th. Quote, the Great New York State Fair is one of New York's most beloved annual traditions, where New Yorkers gather to celebrate the best of our state. Now, through free admission to this wonderful event, more SUNY students will be able to learn more about New York's extensive agriculture, industry, history, and culture, enjoy all the fair has to offer, unquote. The New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets operates the fair, which has celebrated agricultural heritage and community since 1841. The event features performances, exhibits, competitions, food, and family activities. And we'll have more about the fair on this broadcast as we get closer to those dates. In other headlines from Syracuse, 4 cyclosporiasis cases are not related to that outbreak that was nationwide, says a county official by Douglas Doughty. Onondaga County has not been affected by the large outbreak of the cyclospora parasite that has sickened thousands in other states, local health officials say. But there's always a very small chance of ingesting the parasite, known for explosive diarrhea, every year, the county data shows. There have been 4 cyclosporiasis cases so far in Onondaga County this year, County Health Commissioner Dr. Catherine Anderson told PostStandardSyracuse.com. None are tied to the local outbreak, she said. The New York State usually reports 500 to 700 cases each year, and those numbers are up slightly this year, according to the state health data, with 666 reported through July 20th. In Onondaga County, the trend is the same, though on a very small scale. There were 2 cases reported last year, 0 in 2024, 1 in 2023, 0 in 2022, and 2 in 2021. Anderson's message is clear. Keep eating fresh vegetables. Were it not for the national outbreak, this summer's local cases wouldn't even make a headline here. The national outbreak has been traced to iceberg lettuce farms in Mexico, Anderson said. The good news is the combination of recalls and expiration date on fresh produce should contain the outbreak relatively quickly. Cyclosporiasis isn't contagious. Instead, this parasite sticks to fresh produce. In that way, it cannot be easily washed off. So water used to rinse vegetables can contain the parasite as well. Cooking will kill it, but there's no need to change your habits, she said. The most vexing part of it is that it's very difficult to trace the source. In other local headlines, Rangers worked to extinguish a quarter-acre fire on Sawteeth Mountain by Steve Featherstone. A 75-year-old hiker from Honey Eye Falls collapsed about a half mile up Mount Arab Trail in Horseshoe Lake Wild Forest in St. Lawrence County on the afternoon of July 13th. The hiker was conscious but could not walk and had trouble speaking. Because of their cognitive condition and the relatively remote location, State Police Aviation flew 2 state DEC forest rangers to the site for a hoist rescue. One ranger was lowered to the ground to put the hiker in a harness. The other ranger hoisted the hiker into the helicopter. The patient was flown to a nearby landing zone where they were transferred to Tupper Lake Ambulance. On July 13th, smoke was seen rising from Marble Point Lookout on Sawteeth Mountain in Essex County, which is approximately 3,549 feet in elevation. 6 rangers responded to the quarter-acre fire, and they worked with State Police Aviation to keep tabs on it, which continues to smolder in the ground. On the night of July 13th, a ranger assisted Saranac Lake Fire Department in searching for a civilian aircraft that had crashed near the Lake Clear Airport in Harriettstown, Franklin County. They found the plane at 2:25 a.m. on private property adjacent to the Adirondack Rail Trail between Route 186 and McMaster Road. Inside the wreckage were the bodies of 3 people, ages 70, 33, and 2. More rangers arrived to help recover the crash victims. State Police, Federal Aviation Administration, and the NTSB are investigating the crash. On July 13th, while training on state land in Cattaraugus County, rangers observed 2 people in an ATV and dirt bike riding without helmets. Rangers tried to stop them, but the riders drove into the woods and ran off. They did track them to their residence and were issuing 12 tickets. A 31-year-old from Santa Clara got lost while fishing near St. Regis Falls in Franklin County on July 13th. The angler had walked 2 miles downstream but tried to return home after sunset. They couldn't see through the thick vegetation and started calling for help. The angler's roommate heard the calls and called 911. As the rangers searched, members of the St. Regis Falls Fire Department found the angler and guided him through the road. A brush fire ignited a structure fire on Warrensburg Road in Stony Creek, Warren County, on the evening of July 16th. 3 rangers assisted with Chestertown, Garner Lake, Horicon, Johnsburg, North River, Pottersville, Riverside, and Stony Creek Fire Departments to contain the 1.6-acre fire. On July 14th, a 37-year-old from Olive injured their ankle while climbing off a large boulder near the summit of Bear Mountain. Cranberry Lake Rescue and Star Lake Rescue hiked the patient and treated their ankle. The ranger used a wheeled litter to transport the patient to the Bear Mountain Trailhead parking lot. And on July 16th, while on routine patrol, a ranger and a Schoharie County Sheriff's deputy checked a campsite on Burnt Rossman Hill State Forest where 4 people were camping. One of the campers had an active warrant from University Police at SUNY Cobleskill. They took the camper into custody and the other campers left. So news from the DEC, Crime and Safety. In Syracuse, an I-81 contractor struck a gas line near East Colvin Street. Working for the State Department of Transportation, they struck that gas line on Friday morning. Crews working near the East Colvin Street struck the service line connected to a gas main around 8:30, according to DOT. Crews were working on the Interstate 81 Viaduct project. Impacted residents were evacuated. They did not say how many residents that impacted. National Grid crews sent to investigate made the scene safe and repair any damage, according to a National Grid spokesperson. A patient assaulted a staff member and barricaded themselves inside a wing of the Marcy Mental Health Treatment Center for several hours on Wednesday before people took him into custody. Police took him into custody. Around 3 p.m., police responded to the Secure Treatment and Rehab Center Oakview in Marcy. Trooper Jennifer Gyron, a state police spokesman, said in the news release. The male resident assaulted a staff member with a jagged piece of plastic from a broken fluorescent light cover. The staff member had a laceration to their leg and was treated at the urgent care center. After the assault, the resident barricaded himself inside a secure wing of the facility while still armed. After several hours of negotiation, the resident was taken into custody, troopers said. Police said they are withholding the man's name because of his mental health status. The man was charged with second-degree assault, third-degree criminal possession of a weapon, third-degree criminal tampering, and fourth-degree criminal mischief and second-degree menacing. Story by Greta Stuckey. And lastly, from the crimes column and other instances across the counties, from Oneida County, a Rome man died Tuesday after suffering a medical emergency while water skiing on Delta Lake, troopers said. Around 1:48 p.m., a 911 call came in reporting Fred T. Martin, 71, was suffering from cardiac arrest. Witnesses were performing CPR. When the troopers arrived at Country Club, 6800 Golf Course Road, they found Martin unresponsive in a boat at the end of the dock. Firefighters and EMTs took over life-saving measures, and Martin was taken to Rome Hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. Story by Ann Hayes. In local sports news, Buddy Boeheim gets hot when it counts. Story by Donna DeTota. Buddy Boeheim estimated he was 1-for-35 before his big Thursday moment. He exaggerated his poor shooting percentage in Boeheim's Army decisive game against Hall Inn. It wasn't really that bad. But the former SU basketball star made a point. He was struggling to make shots until he wasn't. Boeheim scored 14 points in an 81-76 win over Hall Inn at the Onondaga County War Memorial. He scored 8 of those points in 56 seconds to turn a tight game into a big Boeheim's Army advantage going into the basketball tournament ELAM ending. Boeheim's Army trailed 60-59 when Boeheim caught a pass from Tyson Walker and drained the first three. Isaiah Whitehead tied the game in a driving layup. Walker found Boeheim again, and Boeheim made another three. Then Elijah Hughes passed an open wing jumper to deliver the ball to Boeheim, who made a long two. The Walker to Boeheim combination again worked in its late game magic when Boeheim drained another three-point shot to bump Boeheim's Army to a 70-64 advantage. It's a great group of guys that have confidence in me, Boeheim said later on Thursday, after posing for approximately 100 post-game selfies with Syracuse fans. GMAC kept yelling at me to shoot, so that gave me confidence as well. Tyson gave me a great look, and that got me going. GMAC would be Jerry McNamara, who sat near Boeheim's Army bench with a contingent of current SU players, plus Jim Boeheim, plus SU's entire coaching staff, plus Carmelo Anthony. By the end of Buddy Boeheim's scoring spree, fans were chanting, Buddy. He didn't hear that specific cheer, but Boeheim loves the boost of nostalgia he gets playing these TBT games. The former Syracuse guys on the team talk each summer about feeling that warm, familiar orange embrace. TBT did not officially note the size of Thursday's crowd, but is pretty large and largely clad in orange. I just love pulling up to the 315, going on 81 and seeing Cortland and coming up this way, Hughes said. It's amazing. I love coming back here. This place changed my life forever, so I got a lot of love for this place. Buddy Boeheim was more rested on Thursday. He spent 3.5 weeks playing for the Oklahoma City in the NBA Summer League, auditioning for a job. He played on Sunday, then took the red eye to New Jersey to play for Boeheim's Army Tuesday at Walsh Gymnasium. He had barely slept. He said his legs felt heavy. Boeheim's army put 5 guys in double figures, led by 15 points from Tyson Walker and Cole Swider. Swider was 3 of 6 from 3 and had a game-high 13 rebounds, and Walker also had 10 assists. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From Business News in the Hospitality column, Turning Stone opens its new luxury hotel and fine dining restaurant by Emily Kulkus. Almost exactly 33 years after opening its doors for the first time, Turning Stone Resort Casino has begun welcoming guests to its new luxury hotel and fine dining restaurant, both part of the resort's largest ever expansion. After years of planning and construction on the $400 million expansion, the new 258-room Crescent Hotel opened July 17th, followed by the opening of Salt, a steak and seafood restaurant on the hotel's 7th floor on Wednesday. The full project includes an in-house health center and expansive new conference facilities set to open around Labor Day. The hotel and restaurant are Turning Stone's latest showstoppers, both meticulously designed and curated to cater to the resort's most discerning guests. The hotel and restaurant feature high-end luxury amenities with signature Turning Stone touches. They pay homage to the nature and Oneida Indian Nation. Ray Helbreder, Chief Executive Officer of Turning Stone Enterprises and representative of the Oneida Indian Nation, provided a tour of Crescent and Salt in advance of the opening. Helbreder, 75, led Turning Stone's growth from a modest casino and RV park and golf course to what will be the largest convention center resort in the state, on par to attract events that might otherwise land in Las Vegas or Orlando. The Oneida leader toured the campus like a proud papa, pointing out his favorite new features and architectural details, all while greeting employees by their first names, who most responded with, "Hi, Ray." His presence walking the grounds was commanding yet comfortable, much like Turning Stone's newest additions. "This is the biggest investment we've made in our property since we opened and our most ambitious," Halberger said. "We believe in this area. We have confidence in the region. We have confidence in what can be." Standing in the round stone lane garden between the Crescent and Brook hotels, Halberger recalled the region's struggles over 3 decades. They lost Griffiths Air Force Base. They lost a lot of manufacturers leaving the region and thousands of jobs, just as we were coming into existence in the 90s. "We told them what our vision was. You can't look to the past as a way forward. You have to figure out what you're going to do for the future. And believe if you're not growing, you're dying." The project, dubbed Evolution, included an additional 100,000 square feet of convention space called the Grand Expo, set to open in a few months. That brings Turning Stone's hotel convention space to 225,000 square feet, including a 30,000 square foot ballroom. Construction began in 2023 and finished ahead of its original 2027 opening. The expansion project also includes Rome Health Convenient Care at Turning Stone, an on-site health clinic for staff and guests. The clinic, located near Crescent's lobby, will have early morning, evening, and weekend hours. In other business news, discount retail Burlington stores are set to open in Cicero by Elizabeth Duran. Burlington Stores Incorporated, a New Jersey-based discount retailer, is opening a store in Cicero. A new store targeted to open in the fall, Burlington officials said, with the exact date not been determined. It will open in the space of the former Office Max Office Depot in the TL Marketplace Shopping Plaza at 5671 Circle Drive East in Cicero. This will be the national retailer's fourth store in Onondaga County and 53rd store in the state. Burlington operates a store off Erie Boulevard east in DeWitt on Route 31 in Clay and one in Destiny, USA. The store sells a variety of merchandise, including outerwear, home decor, shoes, products for the home, beauty items, and more. In 2026, Burlington plans to open 110 new stores across the country. The Vestal-based Matthews Auto Group wants to double the size of its dealership in Clay and start selling another brand of cars, Town of Clay planning officials said. The Matthews Nissan dealership at 3893 Route 31 in Clay wants to become a Subaru dealer, according to its application to the town. There is another undisclosed site earmarked for the Nissan dealership, said Brian Bender, Clay's Commissioner of Planning and Development. The dealership is now about 18,000 square feet. Matthews wants to add another 17,000 square feet to the west and east sides. Bender said the Matthews dealership needs a larger footprint for a larger service area and more space for customer service. Matthews also would remove the retention pond with water directed into several underground pipes. That's a first for the town of Clay. Rob Matthews, president of Matthews Auto Group, did not return a call or text message. Matthews operates Cadillac, Chevrolet, Kia, Mitsubishi, Nissan, Subaru, and Volkswagen dealerships in Vestal, a Ford dealership in Norwich, a Kia dealership in Blakely, Pennsylvania, and a Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania. The nation's largest wireless carrier is cutting 3,000 workers as it looks to shed hundreds of its retail stores. Verizon will divest itself of 274 retail locations to franchise owners, the Wall Street Journal reported. In a note to employees, Verizon said it's working with franchise owners operating 5,000 stores to improve customer service experiences at those stores. Large operators run most of the telecommunications giant franchise stores. Verizon will own about 1,000 retail stores after the change. Most of Verizon layoffs will become as it sheds the retail stores, although about 500 corporate employees will also lose their jobs. Verizon has about 90,000 full-time employees, and that change is effective August 16th. Last year, Verizon divested itself of 200 stores as part of a sweeping layoff that cut more than 13,000 jobs. Those cutbacks were the largest ever single round of layoffs in the company's history. Verizon has about 146 million subscribers nationwide, followed by T-Mobile with roughly 140 million and AT&T with 119 million. Have you ever felt the profound happiness of finding a perfect item at Costco, a dessert, a household item, a snack that all the kids like, but then return and find it gone? The average Costco may have more than 4,000 items at any given time, according to an article by Food & Wine, but the company rotates those items regularly to keep the contents of its shelves fresh. So how do customers know when their favorite item is in danger of disappearing? Turns out there's a hack for that. Actually, there's more than one, Food & Wine writer Elliot Harrell reported. The first is to be on the lookout for the Star of Death, as Costco shoppers have called it. Costco's limited inventory and constantly rotating selection are part of what gives the warehouse its treasure hunt appeal. So when you stumble across a product you love, take a quick look at the shelf tag. If a large white price sign has a small asterisk in the upper right corner, you've spotted what's known as Costco's Star of Death. What does that mean? For seasonal items, you'll spot the asterisk to warn you that the item's going away until next year. On other items, it means you'll likely never see them again. Food & Wine also reports the number of Costco price tags can give you hints about the product's availability. If the price is ending in 99 cents, indicates the item is being sold at full price, so that means there's plenty of inventory left. Prices ending in 97 cents, 88 cents, or 0 cents indicates the item has been marked down, which means that the inventory is low. And lastly, in business news, you may have seen the story this week about FedEx closing its local stores. Well, here's the news about the layoff of workers across the upstate and Syracuse area by Rick Moriarty. FedEx is laying off more than half the workers at six facilities across New York, including all 22 employees at a site near Syracuse that closed the end of June. The delivery service disclosed the 164 personnel cuts and notices filed with the state Department of Labor under New York's Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act. The notices said the layoffs will begin August 3rd and will be complete on August 28th, although some have already occurred. These are the six facilities and the number of layoffs at each one. 6313 Running Ridge Road in Cicero, 22 workers. 299 Cayuga Road in Chictauqua, 36 workers. 115 Dry Road in Oriskany, 31 workers. 2123 Link Road in Binghamton, 31 workers. 358 Sing Sing Road in Horseheads, 32 workers. 747 Warren Road in Ithaca, 12 workers. And all but the Cheektowaga facility are closing or already have closed. In total, 293 people worked at facilities before the layoffs. FedEx laid 43 of the 120 people working at a facility near Albany in January. The company confirmed in May that it was planning to close facilities across portions of upstate New York this summer, but did not say at the time how many workers would lose their jobs. The cuts are part of a company-wide transformation dubbed Network 2.0 that FedEx announced in 2022 to streamline how it picks up, transports, and delivers packages across the U.S. and Canada. As part of the new strategy, FedEx said it will have a single vehicle pick up and deliver packages in neighborhoods rather than multiple vans from FedEx Express and FedEx Ground doing the job. This initiative is aiming to simplify service with a one van, one neighborhood model, enhancing efficiency and customer experience, said David Westrick, a spokesperson for the company. He said the company is offering job placement assistance, relocation aid, and severance to the affected employees. Some will be offered other roles within the company. The company said it expects to optimize more than 900 facilities nationwide and close about 475 locations by the end of 2027, representing a 30% reduction in its facilities. Customers who have used the Cicero location may instead drop off packages at 628 South Main Street in North Syracuse, the company said. Taking a look at the weather forecast coming up for the week, looks like Monday will be about 84, partly cloudy, and a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. On Tuesday, 80 degrees, mostly cloudy with showers and storms, 81% chance. On Wednesday, 77 degrees, partly cloudy with light showers and isolated storms. On Thursday, partly cloudy with showers, a 27% chance with a high of 80. And on Friday, partly cloudy with showers and a 27% chance of that with a high of 82. Around the region, temperatures averaged in the 80s for the week, and it will be continuing to do that as the week progresses with a little bit cooler temperatures in Saranac Lake and Lake Placid. Around the country, Anchorage is checking in the 60s these days, and Denver is checking in the high 90s. Vegas still triple digits, as well as Phoenix, Palm Springs. But the other high temperature region was not as high as it had been in the past, which was Honolulu and Texas. And the cool temperatures were always in Seattle, but even they reached into the 80s. Around the world, Acapulco is in the 80s these days. London also in the 80s. And in Rome, Italy, in the 90s. While the cooler temperatures, of course, is Vancouver in the 70s. We had a beautiful weekend of weather so far in upstate New York with just a few showers in the area. So I hope you got out and enjoyed all the things happening around central New York. But let's take a look now at what's going to happen this coming week. On Wednesday, Harriet, A Taste of Freedom, a new powerful exhibition at the Cayuga Museum of History and Art opens, curated by Larry Poncho Brown, highlighting the life and legacy of abolitionist Harriet Tubman. The show features works by more than 45 artists in a variety of media, offering interpretations of key moments from her life, offering a range of perspectives on her enduring impact, and that will last through October 17th. It's at 203 Genesee Street in Auburn, runs from 10 to 5 Wednesday through Saturday, and it's $10 with your museum admission. Thursday through Saturday, for more than 40 years, the Skinny Atlas Festival has brought some of the world's most talented musicians to perform jazz, classical, bluegrass, and other music over 4 weeks. This year's lineup includes Aaron Wunsch, Imani Wins, Andy Ahiko, Julia Bruskin, Michael Cleveland, Rhiannon Giddens, and Silk Road Ensemble, to name a few. Visit scanfest.org for more information. Multiple venues in Skinny Atlas. This week's events are Thursday through Saturday. It does run through August 22nd, and a week pass starts at $100. You're listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Elvis fans, there's a 4-day Elvis tribute event at the Turning Stone Casino, and that's for you. The Empire State Tribute Festival features 5 Las Vegas-style concerts and images of the King World Championship Elvis Tribute Artist Contest. Highlights include the opening night Welcome to My World concert with 7 world champion performers, a reimagined 1988 comeback special, and a tribute to Elton John's career starring Dwight Eisenhower. All event pass holders receive access to all 5 concerts, the championship competition, after-hours entertainment, fan events, and specialty shows. Passes and individual tickets are on sale at tributefestival.rocks/EmpireState or by phone at 1-888-406-5885. It's at the Turning Stone Resort Casino in Verona, runs this Thursday through August 2nd, and tickets start at $35. For country fans, Tim McGraw will be the next big concert at the Empower Federal Credit Union Amphitheater in Lakeview. Special guest 49 Winchester will open the show at 7 p.m. McGraw, who's last performed in Syracuse in 2022, is a Grammy-winning country singer known for his hits like It's Your Love with Faith Hill, Live Like You Were Dying, My Little Girl, Last Dollar, Southern Voice, Truck Yeah, Better Than I Used to Be, Highway Don't Care, Over and Over, and I Like It, I Love It. Tickets are at Ticketmaster. Where is it? 490 Restoration Way in Syracuse. Starts at 7 on Friday, and tickets start at $24. The Macedonian Festival will be at St. George Macedonian Orthodox Church parking lot on Friday and Saturday. You can enjoy live dancing, traditional music, church tours, and food, including grilled meats, stuffed peppers, flaky pastries, and strong Balkan coffee. Free parking is available. 5083 Onondaga Road in Syracuse from 4 to 10 p.m. on Friday and noon to 11 on Saturday, and it is free to attend. Also on Friday and Saturday, you can step back in time at the Rippleton Schoolhouse, an authentic 1887 one-room schoolhouse relocated to the grounds of Lorenzo State Historic Site in Cazenovia. Visitors of all ages can engage with history through activities including traditional games, pen and ink drawing, organ playing, geography lessons, and more. The event is sensory friendly. It's at 17 Rippleton Road in Cazenovia from 10 to 4 on Friday and Saturday. It will run through October 10th, and it is free to attend. Beetlejuice Jr. Hangar Theater will bring the beloved Tim Burton film to life in this frightfully funny stage musical. Lydia Deetz is a strange and unusual teenager whose life takes a supernatural turn when she meets the mischievous ghost Beetlejuice. Featuring catchy songs and heartfelt story about family and finding your place in the world, the show is suitable for audiences of all ages. Tickets on sale at hangartheater.org. The Hangar Theater is in Ithaca, runs from at 10 a.m. and noon on Friday and Saturday, and noon on August 2nd, and the cost is $18. Saturday, the Garrett Smith Estate and National Abolition Hall of Fame and Museum will host their annual commemoration of August 1st, 1834, the day Britain's Slavery Abolition Act outlawed the owning, buying, and selling of humans in its colonies. There will be a storytelling presentation by Syracuse artist and Underground Railroad storyteller Vanessa Johnson, followed by a talk by Utica University professor Clemmie Harris on systemic racism and the need for third reconstruction. The afternoon concludes with a group photograph and procession to the Peterborough Cemetery. For more information, visit peterboroughny.org. 5304 Oxford Road in Peterborough at 1:30 on Saturday, and it is free. Donations, however, are also welcome. Usher and Chris Brown's mega concert will be at the JMA Wireless Dome on Syracuse University's campus this coming weekend. Usher Raymond IV, who headlined the Super Bowl halftime show in 2024, is one of the biggest music stars of the past 3 decades, and his mix of R&B, pop, hip-hop, EDM, and other genres, the Grammy Award-winning artist's hits include Yeah, Burn, My Boy, Confessions Part 2, My Way, You Make Me Wanna, and You Remind Me. Chris Brown is known for songs like Kiss Kiss, Forever, Under the Influence, With You, Loyal, No Guidance, International Love, Yeah, 3 Times, Run It, and Look at Me Now. Tickets at Ticketmaster. Fans may also want to check Vivid Seats, StubHub, and SeatGeek. 900 Irving Ave in Syracuse on 7 p.m. Saturday. Tickets start at $179.25. Resale options are available. Harmony Cats and Cats Meow will give an a cappella cabaret concert of top Billboard hits, with all the proceeds going to Basilica of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Food Pantry. The concert will be in the church hall under the Basilica, with free refreshments to follow. Parking at the Syracuse Academy of Science. It is at the Basilica of Sacred Heart of Jesus Church Hall, 927 Park Avenue, Syracuse, 5:30 on Saturday, and it is free to attend. Free will offerings encouraged to support the pantry. Open Air Art the Yard brings together 15 local artists with an outdoor showcase in the Single Cup Barn in Manlius in partnership with Never Monday. The event will also feature craft beers from Single Cup Beer and food vendors. It's a no-cost summer afternoon designed for art lovers, music fans, and anyone looking for a lovely way to spend a Saturday. More information at allevents.in. 604 East Seneca Street in Manlius, 2 to 9:30 on Saturday, and it is free to attend. Held the first Saturday of August each year, a market is Eastwood Market Day. It offers original artwork, beautiful vintage and antique goods, quality arts and crafts, fun repurposed goods, garage sale items, and much more. Food vendors will be on site and is free to park. 101 Eastwood Road in Syracuse from 9 to 3 on Saturday, and it is also free to attend. A group of light musicians with deep local roots, Dead and Friends members, thrive on that connection, not just with each other, but with the audience. Their sets are unpredictable in the best way. Familiar songs become jumping off points for deep grooves, call and response moments, and the kind of live magic you just can't capture in a recording. Tickets are at the westcotttheater.com, including dinner and drinks options. 524 Westcott Street in Syracuse at 6 p.m. on Saturday. Doors open at 5. General admission is $31.56. The dinner and drink option adds it up to $125 per person. On August 2nd, the Bluegrass Ramble Picnic will happen. Bill Noton's annual WCNY Bluegrass Ramble Picnic brings together 15 bluegrass and old-time country music bands for a full day of live music under a huge tent. Billed as the oldest bluegrass event in New York and New England, this yearly gathering also features refreshments and open jam sessions. Call 315-456-6100 for more information. It happens at Dwyer Memorial Park's Cortland Repertory Theater, Little York section of Preble, from 10 to 6 on August 2nd, and it is free to attend. And finally, the Green Lake State Park offers two events next Sunday. First, you can enjoy a leisurely 1 to 2 mile walk and learn how the park evolved to what it is today. You'll start at the beach area and hike up the Tulip Hill picnic area to hear how the Civilian Conservation Corps built the park in the 1930s. Meet at the Environmental Education Center, the first West Beach parking area. Later, bring the kids to the Pine Woods Campground to learn about the kinds of fish that live in Green Lake and take a stab at the ancient art of fish printing. Children must be accompanied by an adult. For more information, email centralregionee@parks.ny.gov. 7900 Green Lakes Road in Fayetteville. The history hike is from 11 to 12:30 on August 2nd. The fish printing is from 2 to 3 on August 2nd. And it is free to attend the events with your $10 parking fee. In the food column, Syracuse's Supper Club Revival, curated menus, intentional community by Jared Paventi. Anna Sofer looked forward to a quarterly dinner party series while living in Austin, Texas. More than a culinary experience, these gatherings were intended to foster conversation amongst an intimate group of people at the table. When she decided to move back to central New York after the pandemic, she found the area lacked many curated communal dining events. It was always something to look forward to, and that experience definitely inspired me to create my own version here. So she and her husband, Kristen Di Fiorio, added Fancy Fete in March 24 as a branch of their She Fancy Catering Company. Guests sign up to attend the event and receive a mood board, suggested attire, and colors to match the evening's theme. We offer multiple courses built around a central theme and often invite other chefs, makers, and creatives to contribute a course or an element of the evening, Sofer said. It's amazing how beautifully it all comes together when you bring different styles, backgrounds, and training into one room. Guests may find live music or karaoke for entertainment, along with an on-site tattoo artist or watercolor painting class as a group activity. Her goal is to create an immersive, interactive evening for attendees. These intimate gatherings are about purposely investing in each stage of the evening. We jokingly call them sexy dinner parties, which sometimes confuses people. What we mean is intentional. No one is showing up in sweatpants. Sofer is one of a handful of entrepreneurs who are staging intentional evenings of food and conversation with a tradition rooted in the early 20th century, the supper club. Supper clubs come in different shapes and sizes, but generally, they gather a group of people to create an experience that is as much about the food as it is the social interaction. Food historians give Milwaukee native Lawrence Frank, the founder of Laurie's Food Brand, credit for developing the first supper club in Beverly Hills during the 1920s. The concept gained popularity, filling former Prohibition area speakeasies rendered moot by the 21st Amendment. Unlike traditional restaurants, the club would seat guests at large, communal tables, and encourage them to arrive early and stay late, often using entertainment or live music as an enticement, rather than trying to turn the tables over quickly. As Sofer found, those opportunities were few and far between in the Syracuse area. The closest supper club experience has been about 55 miles away in Geneva. FLX Table, which opened in 2016, gathers diners around a single table 5 nights a week for a fixed price menu limited to 14 people per seating. Sofer is among a new generation of chefs and party planners reigniting the idea locally. If it were only about food, people would just go to a restaurant. But many, the social aspect is missing. The idea was to create the vibe of an invited dinner party where guests could connect, blow off some steam from the stresses of life, enjoy a night of incredible food, great drinks, and impeccable vibes, she said. And while not everyone is comfortable starting a conversation organically, some people might just need a nudge. Making new friends as an adult sounds easy, but it rarely feels that way in real life, says Alex Franchelli, who operates Tables with 315, one of the area's newest dinner groups, that takes a different tack at pairing guests. Her monthly dinner series utilizes a quiz to inventory and sort guests into groups of six, which Franchelli says is the right number of dynamic conversations where everyone feels heard based on their personalities and interests. Guests meet their group at a downtown Syracuse restaurant at an assigned time. During dinner, everyone receives a text with details for optional after-dinner gatherings where all the dinner parties come together. Franchelli operates two programs, one open to anyone and a special group open just to mothers. It's about identity beyond motherhood while still honoring it, she said. The Mothers Club arranges people with an eye on the women's stage of motherhood to create a diverse gathering of voices. Table 315's first events were held in April, each attracting more than 20 people. Dinner groups met at restaurants in Armory Square like the York and Lemongrass, with after parties at the Tallman Cocktail Club and Ale's Wine and Whiskey Lounge. Franchelli, it's about building community through assisted intentionality. The reality is a lot of people in that same place. They're ready for something more intentional, but not sure where to start. She said Syracuse deserves this, something reoccurring, welcoming, and it helps people find their place and their people. So Central New York supper clubs right now are Eden Supper Club. It's a club within a restaurant, focuses on global wine-producing region and pairs selections with curated fixed-price menu tier wine party pairings, and the cost starts from $50 to $300. From scratch, on Friday evenings, this supper club offers a monthly menu based on the local seasonal ingredients, and it meets at Local Leaf Tea Lounge in Casanova. From scratch dinners cost $75 plus your drink tax and gratuity. Fancy Fete, the dinner party held in Syracuse every few months from the husband and wife team behind She Fancy Catering. Fancy Fete dinners cost $100 to $200 depending on the specific event. And Table 315, this dinner series matches guests based on the results of a personality quiz, sends them to restaurants across downtown Syracuse for dinner. The booking fee is $15.99 per person per dinner. You cover your own food and beverage at the restaurant, and then the evening ends with a private after-dinner party for all the dinner groups. Table 315 also offers that special club night for mothers. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Post Standard on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. What if you're a diner fan? Okay, you don't want to do supper clubs, but you love diners. Well, I've got a list of diners across the Adirondacks that are family owned and they're charming and serving up more than breakfast, some of them for more than 80 years. And this is from Chuck D'Imperio. For many New Yorkers, summer means a trip to the Adirondack Mountains and the surrounding North Country region for camping, hiking, fishing, biking, and road tripping. In these areas, you're never too far from a roadside diner, a real slice of Americana, where you find a hot cup of coffee, a hearty breakfast, and friendly conversation with the locals. Well, here's a list that samples 10 of the best diners in the Adirondacks and the North Country. Lloyd's of Lowville, 7405 South State Street in Lowville. It's one of upstate's great classical no-frills roadside diners. It's located in an old railroad car and opened in 1939. Breakfasts are fantastic with omelets and more, and can be hard to find a counter stool on the weekend morning. Should probably go home with one of their famous whole pies. Why not? Everybody does. If you're lucky, you'll see bumbleberry pie on their menu. The diner has great food, great retro feel, and yes, it is cash only. Lyle Rasmussen started his eponymous diner in 1939 when local factory workers and farmers needed a place to coffee up. While you're there, Lowville is also home to the largest Philadelphia cream cheese factory and is the area's largest employer. Each September, it hosts a cream cheese festival where they make the Guinness-certified world's largest cheesecake. Phillips Diner at 415 Ford Street in Ogdensburg, one of the oldest diners on the list. It started as the theater dining car in 1930. It was moved in the 1940s and purchased by the Phillips family to operate as a diner, and they still own and operate it. It's a small diner with a great old-fashioned feel, full breakfast menu to get you up and going in a perfect location in the city of Ogdensburg. Your 10-minute walk from the sparkling blue waters of the St. Lawrence River and a great view of the Canadian shore. After your meal, you can take a short 2-block walk to the wonderful Frederick Remington Home and Art Museum. The museum holds many of the master sculptors and painters' most famous works. Noon Mark Diner on 1770 Route 73 in Keene Valley. It's a High Peaks icon and one of the most popular diners in the Adirondacks. It's named after the nearby Noon Mark Mountain. And from its website, nestled in the heart of the Adirondack Mountains, Noon Mark Diner began as a humble roadside stand founded by Lola Porter in 1981. What started as a passion for homemade pies and hearty meals quickly grew into a beloved gathering place for locals, hikers, and travelers alike. Still family operated, the diner continues to serve fresh, locally sourced comfort food, including our world-famous pies made with apples from New York orchards. After your hearty breakfast at the Noon Mark, you can head up Route 9N, and in minutes you'll arrive at Whiteface Mountain and Santa's Workshop at the North Pole. The ADK Diner at 2726 Main Street in Lake Placid, popular with locals and tourists, is perfectly located in the heart of Lake Placid. The menu features high-end breakfast creations like salmon benedict, 2 8 poached eggs with smoked salmon, and toasted and English muffins topped with the hollandaise sauce and garnished with breakfast potatoes. While you're there, you can miss the hustle and bustle of the Adirondack tourist destination. It's 1 block from the famous Lake Placid Speed Skating Oval, 2 blocks from Lake Placid Olympic Museum, and 3 blocks from the lakefront itself. The Route 11 Diner at 1112 Route 11 in Gouverneur. Classic breakfast favorites fill this diner's menu, from pancakes and eggs to French toast, breakfast sandwiches, and more. Inside, the pastel pink and blue decor gives the place a nostalgic 1950s feel. And if Albert ever comes back, he'll have a fitting order waiting. Jailhouse Rock, a platter loaded with 3 eggs, toast, home fries, bacon, sausage, and ham. A breakfast fit for the king. While you're here, you can see the Lifesavers candy was made in Gouverneur. You can drive the distance downtown to see the world's largest roll of candy. Shorty's Place at 1280 Caffeine Street in Watertown. What a retro show place this is. The gorgeous diner is dressed up in cheery red and white, everything you remember on the interior. Lots of glass, red leather swivel stools at the counter, plush red and white booths, and more. And the dining room booths also have those little personal jukeboxes. Try the breakfast lasagna. The dish consists of warm casserole of scrambled eggs, ham, sausage, pepperoni, onions, peppers, cheese, and breakfast potatoes. Little touches like that make this place special. Applesauce is a side dish. When was the last time you saw that? Head downtown afterwards and stroll through the Paddock Arcade, one of the oldest continually operating covered shopping arcades in the United States. Walt's Diner, 3047 Route 28 in Old Forge. It seems almost impossible to visit historical Old Forge without stopping at Walt's. Whether for your morning coffee or a hearty breakfast or lunch, it seems everybody goes to Walt's, and they've been doing that for more than 30 years. Old Forge is a mecca for upstate New York tourists, and the summer gets kind of crazy here. But everything you want is at Walt's. Filling meals, prices that won't break the bank, plenty of good choices for kids, and a location amongst the many shops and attractions in the heart of the busy downtown. And the lake is just a 5-minute walk away. An interesting menu choice is a jambat. It consists of sausage, peppers, potatoes, onions, provolone, and 2 scrambled eggs. The homemade biscuits slathered in homemade gravy are also out of this world. After your breakfast, cross the street and go up the block to the famous Old Forge Hardware Store. It's one of the most visited retail stores in the Adirondacks. The Griddle Diner at 955 State Street in Clayton serves classic diner breakfast made with care and served with a hometown smile. 2 interesting menu items are not to miss. Taking a nod from their foodie cousins in Rochester, this diner serves up a garbage omelet. What's in it? Well, as the menu says, just about every topping we have in the kitchen. Another favorite is the jumbo grilled cinnamon rolls, which are a meal unto themselves. Even a jumbo writer like me finds it hard to finish this delicious morning treat. And then you can take the short cross over the St. Lawrence River to visit the Antique Boat Museum, which runs the nation's oldest antique boat show and has the most extensive collection of freshwater recreation boats in North America. The Red Rooster Diner at 9861 Route 812 in Croghan is a longtime popular diner in the North Country, and they serve a full breakfast to get you going. It's a summertime favorite for many campers and hikers who descend on that area annually. If it is a nice Adirondack morning, you can sit out back at a table with a great river view. And while you're there, you can plan a visit to Croghan's International Maple Museum Center to learn all about the maple-producing heritage that this area is famous for. And you can drop in at the Croghan Meat Market on Main Street, known for its excellent ring bologna products, which has been making for more than 100 years. And last but not least, Chef Daryl's Mountain Diner at 8814 Route 30 in Blue Mountain Lake. This is a real treat. It's a 1950s classic dining car tricked out in shiny chrome and brilliant white and blue colors. The owner is Daryl Spencer, the Culinary Institute American trained chef. Folks love his twist on the all-American breakfast foods, including Irish eggs Benedict, eggs Florentine, and satisfyingly great breakfast skillets. And breakfast is served all day. This place is adorable. It really strives for that old classic diner feel with black and white checkered floor tiles, a low arched railroad dining car ceiling, royal blue booths and swivel stools at the counter, and so much more. The diner is such a gem to come upon when traveling this beautiful, heavily forested area in the heart of the Adirondack Park. And while you're here, just around the corner, is the Adirondack Experience, the museum at Blue Mountain Lake. And if that article didn't make you hungry, from Ontario County, an unusual cafe is half coffee shop, half bank, with People Have Options by Samantha House. Matcha, muffins, and banking advice are on the menu at a new cafe near Rochester. Capital One Cafe recently opened in Eastview Mall in Victor, 14 miles southeast of Rochester, and it marks the chain's first location in upstate New York. The cafe run by the banking giant is half coffee shop, half bank. Customers can fuel up with caffeine and snacks while getting account advice from a bank ambassador. The cafe offers free Wi-Fi, an ATM, and reservable community meeting rooms, all in an open coffee shop setting. The mall's Facebook announcement was met with excitement, jokes, and skepticism on social media. "I want to know if the Capital One guy is going to be there for the grand opening," one person wrote. "I've always liked these few, but this really is not it," another commented. "It's a shame to see a big multi-billion-dollar corporation move in where there's already 2 wonderful local bakeries to support Village Bakery and Crazy Cat Lounge and Cafe. Cool, I'll take a latte with 23% interest, please, one man joked. Well, you don't have to bank with Capital One to visit the cafe, but cardholders get 50% off drinks when using their Capital One cards. Capital One has more than 60 cafes in 20 states, 7 in New York State, with all but the Victor Spot in New York City. They feature California Verb coffee roasters coffee, specialty drinks, avocado toast, yogurt powder bowls, and more. Upstate's first one is located at entrance 3 of Eastview Mall, 7979 Pittsford Victor Road, Route 96 in Victor. It's open from 9:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 10:30 to 6 on Sundays. And for more information, you can visit the cafe's page at Eastview Mall's website. I thought the Citibank Cafe was just an advertising gig. I didn't realize it was a real thing. Wow. All right, and to close out the broadcast today, we're going to talk about this huge movie that opened last week, The Odyssey, and the director who made it happen. Christopher Nolan has 13 films that changed the ambition of the blockbuster movie. And here's how The Odyssey and all the rest stack up in top 13. In an entertainment increasingly dependent on franchises, Christopher Nolan has turned his name into one of them. He turned procedural about a scientist into a billion-dollar office blockbuster. He built a career creating crowd pleasers that challenge, overwhelm, and find a life of their own beyond the weekends or summers that they dominate. Number 13 was Following in 1998. Following is Nolan's Rosetta Stone in 70 Minutes. It's his debut film. Number 2 was Dark Knight Rises in 2012. Tom Hardy's Bane is an indelible working-class villain defanged by a screenplay more interested in twists and shocks than political coherence. Number 11 was Insomnia in 2002. After bending the language of film in Memento, Nolan retackled the remake of a Norwegian thriller as a straight detective story with Al Pacino and Robin Williams. Number 10, Batman Begins in 2005. Its sequel casts such a long shadow that it's easy to forget how influential Batman Begins has been. Nolan rebooted Batman, but also the entire concept of reboots, ushering in an era where countless stories suddenly had to be darker, grittier, and psychologically grounded. Number 9 was Oppenheimer in 2023. In a procedural about one man's nuclear-level guilt trip, Nolan transformed the committee hearings, security clearances, and theoretical physics into a taut thriller. Number 8 was Tenet in 2020, another movie that's all process. It's Nolan's most frustrating watch, a stubborn story that demands repeat viewing. He's always written about obsessed men, but this time his own obsession is what we confront as he struggles mightily to prove that this story, following timelines back and forth at the same time in the same frame, can exist. Number 7 was Dark Knight in 2008. That's Nolan's Batman sequel, a showcase of the superhero as a crime epic. Not exactly the Godfather, but there's Corleone-like characters in there. Dunkirk was number 6 in 2017 in his most beautiful film. And number 5 was Memento in 2000. Number 4, The Odyssey in 2026. Number 3, Interstellar in 2014. Number 2, The Prestige in 2006. And his number 1 defining film is Inception from 2010. So Christopher Nolan is the film director of our decade, but there's plenty of other movies out there to see. I just don't have a listing to cover for you this week. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the weekend edition of the Post Standard. As always, we welcome your feedback on what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear more of or less of. And your reader has been Donna. Thank you for listening.